clears the Senate, U.S. weapons stockpiled in Poland and Germany, ready for Ukraine.
Finally, finally, finally. Tonight, after more than 6 months, America sends a message to the entire world. We will not turn our back on you.
Pro-Palestinian college protests grow in the U.S.
In zip ties, I walked in the path of my Jewish ancestors, like my great-grandfather, who was part of the 1905 Russian Revolution.
And a robot that helps doctors find lung cancer.
It provides a real-time view of the lungs as the catheter enters the breathing tubes.
Today is Wednesday, April 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. A sweeping foreign aid package with $61 billion for Ukraine easily passed the U.S. Senate late Tuesday night. U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell.
This is an extremely important day in the history of our country and of the free world. They're all watching, waiting to see what we would do. When Putin escalated his war against Ukraine, I told our colleagues that allies and adversaries alike would pay very close attention to America's response. When Iran-backed terrorists invaded the Jewish state on October 7th to slaughter innocent Israelis, I warned that the world would watch closely for signs that American leadership was actually weakening. For months, our friends have watched to see whether America still had the strength that won the Cold War or the resolve that has underpinned peace and prosperity literally for decades. Our enemies have tested whether the arsenal of democracy is, in fact, built to endure. Well, tonight, the Senate will send a clear message.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Finally, finally, finally. Tonight, after more than 6 months of hard work and many twists and turns in the road, America sends a message to the entire world. We will not turn our back on you. Tonight, we tell our allies, we stand with you. We tell our adversaries, don't mess with us. We tell the world, the United States will do everything to safeguard democracy and our way of life. This bill is one of the most consequential measures Congress has passed in years to protect America's security and the future, the very future of Western democracy.
In addition to the $61 billion for Ukraine, the bill also provides $26 billion for Israel, $8 billion to counter China in the Pacific, and the provision that includes a potential ban on the Chinese-controlled app TikTok. President Joe Biden, in anticipation that this aid would pass the House and the Senate, ordered the military to move the first round of weapons to Germany and Poland so that once he signs it, the aid could get to Ukraine quickly. Joining us now from the Pentagon, VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb. Carla, what do we know about this?
The president had directed a few weeks ago, a senior White House official told VOA, to move some of this ammunition primarily because the expectation was that eventually the House would bring this bill up for a vote. And we have known for months now that as soon as this bill came up for a vote, there was overwhelming support in the House, bipartisan support in the House for this bill.
And do we know what's materiel-wise, what's ready to go?
I've been told by multiple defense officials that there is going to be an aid package valued at up to $1 billion to try to get Ukraine the much-needed ammunition it needs. In this aid package, there's going to be 155-millimeter rounds, I'm told, Gimlers, which is the ammunition that's used for the HIMARS. There's going to be Stingers and Javelins. There are going to be all sorts of things that the supplies have been running low for weeks and weeks. Ukraine has been asking for them.
VOA's Carla Babb at the Pentagon. So let's go deeper. Joining us now from the University of Southern California, Robert English, Associate Professor of International Relations. All right, so this has been a long time coming for Ukraine.
So the overall number is significant. We don't know over coming months, over the coming year, the exact components of each subsequent shipment, but it's a big number. And on top of the over $50 billion that EU countries committed to providing, is a huge boost to Ukraine's defense capability.
Now, this will certainly bring the Ukraine forces relief, but there are people saying that in a long term, the totality of the war, nothing we send them, nothing we can do is going to change the outcome, which is Russia's going to win. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. If Russia's going to win means keep advancing and conquer huge new swaths of the country, I absolutely don't agree, because these systems are filling the holes that Ukraine chiefly needs to beef up its defenses and halt that Russian advance. So if, you know, that's a win, I suppose, if the war were to end along the current lines. But if somebody means Russia's going to win, that they're going to just roll over Ukraine in a year or two and outweigh the West, no, that's not clear at all. Russia has severe personnel, logistics, and other problems of its own, and it's fighting doggedly, but it's losing massive numbers of men and large numbers of equipment. It cannot go on forever, although its productive capacity is impressive. So there's no guaranteed outcome whatsoever. I do agree with the skeptics in that a complete Ukrainian victory seems about as unlikely as a complete Russian victory. And I do see a kind of stalemate and probably ceasefire with prolonged negotiations to follow, that outcome over the next 2 years is fairly likely. But no one's going to achieve total victory.
This material that we're sending, the $61 billion in total over the next however long it takes to reach that number, does it help Ukraine push back to where they were at least, or even get more of the territory back?
Marginally so, but not in a big way. And let me describe why that's so. To hold off the current Russian advance, to halt them and maybe force a slight reversal, those artillery shells are crucial. The long-range rocket artillery, meaning the HIMARS rounds and the ATACMS, right, tactical missile system, are crucial. Those longer-range weapons especially will hit Russian depots, command centers. We are now sending a longer-range version of the ATACMS, which will extend, you know, almost 100 miles further than the current ones. And that's going to be torture for the Russians. They're going to, as they have in the past, they will probably do nothing for a while, incur some severe losses of officers, of warehouses, of fuel, and then they will learn and start moving back. And all that will slow their advance considerably. But for for Ukraine to go on the offensive and score major gains, it lacks something that we cannot give them, and that is soldiers. Because what we've learned by now is that the offense is brutally expensive. There's always been a kind of rule of thumb, right? 3-1. You need three times as many soldiers to score an offensive gain as you need to defend territory. Well, with these drones and modern precision weapons, it seems like it's more like 5-1, and maybe even sometimes 7 or 10-1, such that if Ukraine doesn't only want to hold Russia off, but has plans for a major new offensive of its own, it needs manpower. And we know the extraordinary problems they're having in another mobilization. And I just don't see where they find 300,000 or 400,000 more men simply to get back up to the kind of strength they had a year ago when their big offensive ultimately failed. The takeaway is that what we're giving them now will largely help them with their defenses to stop Russia's advance, to hold the line, and maybe push back a bit, but not a lot more.
Interesting. Thank you so much. Robert English, Associate Professor of International Relations at the University of Southern California. Mass graves containing hundreds of bodies found at Gaza hospitals are being scrutinized at the United Nations, where a call for an independent investigation was made on Tuesday.
We are horrified also by the destruction of Al-Nasser Medical Complex and Al-Shifa Medical Complex, and the reports of the discovery of mass graves in and around facilities. And we call for independent, effective, transparent investigations into the deaths. Given the prevailing climate of impunity, this should include international investigators. Hospitals are entitled to very special protection under international humanitarian law. And let's be clear, the intentional killing of civilians, detainees, and others who are hors de combat is a war crime.
Ravina Shamdasani, the spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, said her office was working on corroborating Palestinian official reports that 283 bodies were found at Nasser and another 30 at Al-Shifa. We're following these other stories from around the world. What began last week when students at a New York Ivy League university refused to end their protest against Israel's war with Hamas has turned into a much larger movement. Students across the nation set up camps, occupied buildings, and ignored demands to leave on Tuesday. Protests against Israel's war with Hamas had been bubbling for months, but kicked into a higher gear after more than 100 pro-Palestinian demonstrators who had camped out on Columbia University's Upper Manhattan campus were arrested last week. Hundreds of thousands of Argentines took to the streets of Buenos Aires on Tuesday in an anti-government march against budget cuts to public universities. It's the biggest protest yet against President Javier Milei's painful austerity measures. Kim Jo-young, the powerful sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, said the country will continue to build overwhelming and the strongest military power to protect its sovereignty and regional peace. The North's KCNA news agency reported on Wednesday that Kim was reacting to a series of military exercises by the U.S. military in the region this year. An aide to a member of the European Parliament for the far-right Alternative for Germany has been arrested on suspicion for spying for China. Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn reports it's the latest in a number of such arrests across Europe.
Prosecutors named him as Jian Ji in a statement on Tuesday and accused him of passing information about discussions in the European Union legislature to Chinese intelligence. The website of Maximilian Kra, the AfD's top candidate in June's election to the assembly, lists Jian Guo as one of his assistants. Cross said he learned of Guo's arrest from the media. In a social media post, he said that if the allegations are true, it would lead to Guo's immediate dismissal. The aide also spied on Chinese opposition figures in Germany, prosecutors said. He was arrested in Dresden on Monday. Germany's interior minister called the case very serious and said if the charges were proven, it would be an attack on the internal constitution of democracy in Europe. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry told a briefing that reports of Chinese espionage in Europe were hype and intended to discredit and suppress China. Anxiety about alleged Chinese spying has mounted across Western Europe in recent months. On Monday, three German nationals were arrested on suspicion of handing over technology with military applications. The same day, two men were charged in Britain with spying for China. One was reported to have worked for a prominent lawmaker in the governing Conservative Party.
Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, artificial intelligence surrounds U.S. political life. from fundraising to campaign advertising. Some lawmakers are looking to better police the use of generative content in this year's presidential election, as they say it threatens voter confidence in what is real. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
So far, artificial intelligence in this presidential campaign has been most pronounced in the New Hampshire primary, where thousands of voters received a call from a voice sounding like Joe Biden telling them not to vote.
Voting this Tuesday only enables the Republicans in their quest to elect Donald Trump again.
The fake voice was made by Louisiana magician Paul Carpenter for $150.
If anybody's looking for some kind of flag, not a false flag, but like a flag, a gameplay flag where something bad happened, and I'm the flag.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal says there's no time to wait for another flag.
Disinformation and deepfakes are about to descend on the American public. The form of their arrival will be political ads and other forms of disinformation that are made possible by artificial intelligence. There is a clear and present danger to our democracy.
At a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on AI in this election last week, Senator Josh Hawley said it's time to act.
The dangers of this technology without guardrails and without safety features are becoming painfully, painfully apparent. And I think the question now is that are we going to have to watch some catastrophe unfold?
It's already possible to detect calls like the one in New Hampshire, says artificial voice generation developer Zohaib Ahmed.
We believe that AI watermarking technology is a readily available solution that can already check the integrity of audio content.
With that technology in place, what's lacking is regulation, says deepfake detection entrepreneur Ben Coleman.
There's a really nice framework in both national and also state-level regulations in the space. When you upload something on, for example, YouTube, it's checking for a few things. It's checking for violence. It's checking for underage imagery. It's checking for, are you uploading the latest Drake song? That's because of regulations. So to scan for generative media would just be another check within that same flow.
The U.S. Federal Election Commission is considering rules that would prohibit using AI in ads to deliberately deceive voters. New Hampshire Secretary of State David Scanlon told the Senate committee that unchecked generative AI, like the fake Biden call, threatens voter confidence.
The most fundamental, important thing that I perceive in my role as Secretary of State is to make sure that an election is not messed up, that, you know, the voters believe and know that it was run fairly and accurately to the highest standards possible. And if we lose that, it will be very, very hard to get it back.
In New Hampshire, lawmakers are working to require that political advertising within 90 days of an election disclose if audio, still images, or video have, quote, been manipulated or generated by artificial intelligence technology and depicts speech or conduct that did not occur. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
The first witness in Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial, former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker, testified on Tuesday that he used his supermarket tabloid to suppress stories that might have hurt Trump's 2016 presidential bid. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
The former National Enquirer publisher said he used the supermarket tabloid to suppress stories that might have hurt Trump's 2016 presidential bid. Pecker said the decision followed a 2015 meeting at which he told Trump the Enquirer would publish favorable stories about the billionaire candidate and keep an eye out for people selling stories that might hurt him. Prosecutors say Pecker's actions helped Trump deceive voters by burying stories of alleged extramarital affairs at a time when he already faced multiple accusations of sexual misbehavior. The former president is charged with criminally falsifying business records to cover up a $130,000 payment to buy the silence of porn star Stormy Daniels, who says they had a sexual encounter 10 years earlier. Trump has pleaded not guilty and denied having an encounter with Daniels.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. And finally, a new weapon against lung cancer. It's a robot that allows doctors to navigate the lungs and provides a real-time view as it moves around. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino explains how the technology could help produce safer and more accurate lung cancer diagnoses.
With 125,000 people in the U.S. dying each year of lung cancer, according to the National Cancer Institute, doctors agree that early detection can save lives. But when a patient's screening detects troubling signs such as nodules, a biopsy may be needed.
The robot is thin, so it can actually get to a lot more branches than we currently can.
Dr. Alexander Zider is at Sutter Health's Mills Peninsula Medical Center in Burlingame, California. He has used the new ion bronchoscopy robot on 3 patients so far.
Some nodules are too small to biopsy, but other nodules we have to biopsy to determine if there's cancer or not.
During the procedure, it provides a real-time view of the lungs as the catheter enters the breathing tubes. It also helps doctors determine how far the needle used in a biopsy can be safely inserted without causing a lung collapse. He hopes the ability of the robot to find, biopsy, and even mark tough-to-reach nodules will help reduce anxiety in patients.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform, on the VOA app, and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
April 25th is World Malaria Day, an annual observance in recognition of global efforts to control the disease. Malaria, which is transmitted by the Anopheles mosquito, is a serious but treatable and preventable illness that nonetheless kills too many of its victims. Malaria is really a problem globally, but the majority of cases are in the continent of Africa, said Dr. David Walton, the U.S. Global Malaria Coordinator, in a recent interview.
There are about 608,000 people who died last year of malaria and about almost 250 million cases.
75% of those deaths were children under 5 years old. The United States is the largest contributor to malaria prevention and control, said Dr. Walton. And the U.S. President's Malaria Initiative is the U.S. government's largest program to fight malaria globally.
We're in interagency collaboration with the United States Agency for International Development and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And largely, we are working with 30 partner countries around the globe to bring the ways in which we can prevent and treat malaria to scale alongside the partner countries and their national malaria control programs.
The U.S. President's Malaria Initiative has grown and evolved with the complexity of malaria and the mosquitoes that transmit malaria, said Dr. Walton.
There's a host of new developments when we think about the fight against malaria. There's new medicines, there are new insecticides, both insecticides to be sprayed in people's homes, but also insecticides that are used on the bed nets to prevent malaria. But I think the most exciting thing that we think about in terms of new developments is two new vaccines against malaria. In terms of those vaccines, they have already been used to immunize over 2 million children in Malawi, Kenya, and Ghana. And the success in terms of that rollout has been absolutely incredible.
The future of the fight against malaria really is a complex one, said Dr. Walton. For us at the U.S. President's Malaria Initiative, the fight against malaria, we feel, is fundamentally winnable. We're at a crossroads. We're at a really sort of special time with a lot of opportunities and a lot of challenges. And our fundamental goal is to never let a child die of a mosquito bite. We feel that is eminently possible. We are excited to continue that effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.